Hello and welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selina Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
So welcome to a Project Love real love story. I'm so excited to be joined today by the wonderful Natasha Lunn. So we're going to get straight into it. So let's start from the beginning. How did you and Dan first meet?
So we met on a dating app called Happn, which is the location-based one.
Yeah.
I think he sent me a message which said, "I like your hair," as a first message. and we then met in person. We went to a pub around northeast London and then onto a pizza restaurant. And it was a 12-hour first date. So... But there was probably quite a bit of messaging back and forth before we got to that point. But yeah, that was the first time we met in person.
And how did things develop from there?
It was quite a stop-start relationship at the beginning. I think the one thing is when you've been single for a long time, I was 30 when I met Dan and he was 34. You've built a big and full life of family and friends and work. And I think sometimes it's quite difficult to make space, even to date somebody. Mm-hmm. And so for a long time, it was a case of, I could see you Thursday in 2 weeks' time, and he would be away. And there was a lot of sort of missing each other. But also in those early dates, whilst I would have fun and enjoy the date whilst I was there, every time we were apart, I'd be sort of thinking, is this right? Is this definitely something I want to pursue? You know, would we work? We're very different, sort of umming and ahhing every time. And something would keep me going on another date. But I certainly was saying to my friends, you know, I'm dating this guy, I'm just not sure. Whilst he jokes that it was me saying that, I'm sure there was a bit of that on his part as well. Especially because you see each other for these snatch periods of time and it's quite formal and you're almost performing on a date at the beginning and it's quite a lot of effort and energy, and we just took a long time to get to that sort of relaxed place. And I think actually it got as far as the stage where I was thinking, you know, I was looking at other people and saying they've been seeing this person for this amount of time and they're now boyfriend and girlfriend and we're sort of still in this limbo period, it must not be right. And I was actually thinking, you know, I'm probably going to just have a chat about this and maybe, you know, maybe even end it. And I bumped into him at a friend's birthday party and they were like, "Oh, is that the guy you're dating?" I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, this is, you know, a bit awkward." But I think there was something about that setting where it was our friends and it was relaxed and it wasn't a sort of formal date, that we just had this great night. And I met up with him the next day and I was quite hungover. And again, it was just very relaxed and he was just making me laugh. And we sat at the bar eating Eton Mess. And I think that was the first time I thought, I think this guy is amazing. Sort of, what am I doing here? Why am I really dragging my heels about this? And from there, I knew quite quickly. But that was probably about 3.5 months in.
And you were telling me before about the scenario when you were on your way to meet him and you were looking at his dating profile.
Yes, because as I was saying, you know, the arduous task of dating apps, we quite often pass our phone around to friends and, or even just drunkenly, I'd swipe lots of people and not quite know who I'd swiped. And so I think when we were messaging fairly early on, I looked at his pictures and I thought, oh, one of these he's smoking and I didn't really want to date somebody who smoked. And another of these, he's laying on the floor with the big concrete bollard where as a penis on the floor, and I thought, this guy's either got the humor of like a teenage boy or he's just really strange. And I thought, you know, I'm really not sure about this. But again, the messages, we would had a lot of back and forth about Alanis Morissette, and there's something in his messages that just always made me laugh and it never felt difficult. So I think I was just like, I'll just ignore the pictures. Because also looking at my own pictures, I don't know if they were completely representative of who I was. So I was trying to sort of think about that too. And then on the way there, I got a message and I texted him and I said, "I realise I don't know really what you look like. Might not recognise you." And he said, "I'm the one wearing the neon pink shorts and turquoise Hawaiian shirt." And I thought, shit, should have paid more attention to the penis bollard photo. But luckily it turned out that was a joke. And now I know Dan, he does have a little bit of the humour of a teenage boy, so it makes perfect sense, but it makes me laugh. So I would say just really the lesson is just don't judge people's pictures.
Yeah.
You know, I think some of my most successful dates actually were, I would just look at the main picture and like them. I wouldn't scroll through because that would often give you a reason not to, or it's just, I just don't think it represents who somebody is, and almost it's better to judge them on the messages. I think that's what I did in the end.
A key lesson in our Get Ready for Love course is to be open to being surprised at who you could be attracted to. And that comes up so much with the women that we've spoken to over the years that are in relationships now. They say that the person they're with just isn't the type of person they thought they'd be attracted to.
Yeah, and also I think I went through a terrible phase of thinking that I wanted to date journalists or writers because that's what I did. And so when everyone would have a job and they were journalists at the BBC, I'd be like, oh yes, this must be, we'd have stuff in common. And Dan is a primary school teacher, and he didn't have that on his bio, actually. I think it said, it was some joke, but he didn't actually say what he did. And I don't think that I would have thought that I don't think I would have thought a primary school teacher and I would have had loads in common, which now just seems ridiculous that I thought that I would need someone. And actually, a lot of the journalists who are dating were terrible dates and turned out disasters. So I think that's another thing. We get really wedded to job titles and things like that too, as well as much as looks. And I think a lot of people are job snobs as well in the way they, and I just, everything I thought turned out to be wrong in the initial stages. Yeah.
Have you encountered any setbacks or challenges in your relationship?
I mean now we've been together 3 years, obviously there's different challenges, but in the beginning I think in this relationship and in every relationship I've ever had, I certainly found that beginning point before you're in a relationship, at the point where you're sort of deciding whether or not this is, I guess, something worth investing your time in, you don't know the person well enough. You're kind of second-guessing them a lot of the time. And I think it can be really exhausting, and you can waste a lot of energy trying to figure out how they're feeling. And I think for me, there got to a point where I did know I liked him by this point, and we still hadn't really progressed past the seeing each other a couple of times a week stage. And we'd gone on a night out and ended up in pubs two roads across from each other. And the next day we're chatting and I was like, where are you? And he was like, I was in the De Beauvoir Arms. And I was like, I was in the Scots Head. And I was thinking, hang on, we've been dating for 4 months. Why did neither of us invite the other one, or we didn't know we were there, or we just, our lives were just still very separate. And so we went for a drink and I said to him, you know, what are we doing here? Do we really want to be in this? Like, are we gonna choose to give this a shot and be in it? Are we gonna step into this with 2 feet, or are we, you know, if you don't want to, if I don't want to, let's just decide now to give up on it. And I think in my 20s, never would have called it. I never would have had that conversation, because I'd be thinking, I don't want to be the first one to bring this up, or I don't want to, you know, I want to seem cool and aloof, and like, I'm not even thinking about what's going on, which is, of course, you're both thinking that. And actually having the courage to say what's on your mind, even if you're unsure, just to voice that, it feels really uncomfortable, but I think it's the best thing that you can do. And I think we don't do it because we don't want to risk rejection. But either the rejection is already there and you're wasting time not knowing about it. And I think often people respect you so much more for speaking your mind. And you can even kill a relationship by not talking about that stuff soon enough. And then it sort of just, it just fizzles out, I think.
And like you were saying before, the biggest risk is not saying anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think from that point, I think Dan went home and thought, okay, actually, I do like this girl. Maybe, you know, maybe I need to do something about it, or it might just slip away. And I think for me, having that conversation made me realize I did really like him, because I wanted to have it. And that from that point, it was easier, but there was definitely that point where you just have to sort of choose it. And actually, that's not about the title of boyfriend and girlfriend or anything else, as you often think it is, because I think you can have that conversation and still not choose it. But it's scary, isn't it? It's always, I would just always encourage anyone to just say what's on their mind.
And were you scared when you were saying how you felt about him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I certainly had the... I think I had a phone call with my friend saying, like, okay, this is the rehearsed line. And it's just spitting the line out. So I've been thinking this in a minute. What do you think? And that, and once you've spat the words out... And I had the same thing, actually, because I own my flat. Another kind of, like, seismic point was, you know, in my head I was thinking I really want to move in with him, but he's probably not going to ask me because he would be moving into my flat. So I'm probably going to have to bring this up.
Yeah.
And I remember being on the phone with my friend Caroline, and she's like, you've just got to say, I need to rent out my room. I need to find a housemate. And I would rather that housemate is you than anyone else. So we have this line. And so I remember sort of being in bed and being like, I need to get a housemate. And I think in this really rehearsed voice. And of course, he was thinking that he wanted to live together, but he was like, I couldn't ask to move into your flat. But again, it's just having the courage to spit those words out. And then the conversation always unfurls from there. I guess that, you know, saying I love you, there's always those sorts of moments where you have to find the courage.
And it just takes 5 seconds, I find, five seconds of bravery and courage, because as soon as you start talking, you say the words, then it flows. But it's just that initial 5 seconds where you start to initiate that conversation.
Yeah, and I think as women, we are encouraged to be passive. That's the narrative. You know, I guess that's the structure of relationships, from like the guy proposing to the, you know, often women wanting to wait till the guy says it first. Lots of people I know, and I hate that, because I think that's caused me to be in bad relationships, or at least to waste more time than I needed to on bad relationships, because I just felt I couldn't voice what I felt. And for being, you know, the stereotypes around needy and over-emotional and all that stuff. So I feel like it is rooted in a sort of sexist narrative.
And do you think that comes from fairy tales and rom-coms? You know, the whole damsel in distress kind of archetype.
Yeah, I definitely think it's around marriage, the way that the institution is structured around a proposal. I think it does come for a lot from that. But yes, certainly in stories, I interviewed Hadley Freeman recently, and she was talking about how Nora Ephron was so rare because she showed women like moaning and about being single and breakups, and men moaning about being single and breakups as well. Like, that both sexes want that, which is really true. But so often it's the women who are seen as pathetic for wanting love, and the men are sort of, you know, carefree and having fun with their friends and eligible bachelors and having a great time. And the women are sort of like eating tubs of ice cream. I mean, that's the stereotype on films. But yeah, I think in When Harry Met Sally, you know, Harry's moaning in bed and feeling miserable about himself as much as she is. And yeah, I think that if we have more stories like that, then men would also feel it was easier for them to say to their friends, actually, I'm feeling really lonely and I really want to meet someone, which I think is harder for them to say. And I think it is also rooted in the biological inequality of men and women, because I think in your 30s, you know, you do have that added pressure if you do want children. I've watched relationships where the woman wants to get married and have kids, and the guy's got so much more time, sadly. And I feel like that brings that inequality and that balance of a woman needing to say, actually, hang on, we need to, you know, I want this. And the man doesn't necessarily need to. So I feel like it's three-pronged, which is why I just say everything that's on my mind, because I think you're the only one who loses out by staying quiet. And also I think it's just, again, rooted in this idea that vulnerability or saying those things is somehow unsexy. And to me, there's nothing sexier than somebody saying, you know, I'm worth this. This is what I want. I back myself enough to not settle for something that I don't want. But obviously, it is easier said than done. I think you have to get on the phone to your friend and rehearse the line. That's my advice. And start from there.
It's what Brené Brown says when she talks about vulnerability and what she calls wholeheartedness, which is, I think, what you were talking about before, like being all in, you know, here, like laying my cards on the table, here, this is how I feel, and I'm all in, and I don't know how you feel, but this is me. And it's this incredible, beautiful vulnerability. and the courage that it takes to be in that place.
Yeah, and I think that that applies to dating as well, because I certainly put off joining a dating app for so long, mainly because part of me felt that I would just love to meet a man in dorm books in Hampstead or, you know, on a bench or something, and or on a plane. And I also thought it was not cool. You know, I didn't want to go all in on dating. Like, that made me feel rejected, that I had to try at it when for other people it seemed so easy. And I spent a long time, you know, just throwing myself at my career and my friendships and my family, which was amazing in many ways. But I think I only met Dan when I said, hang on, you know, I'm going to go all in on dating. I'm going to just decide this is what I actively want and not be embarrassed about wanting it and recognizing that it's important to me and that I'm going to have to, you know, if I'm just going to sit here and do nothing, probably nothing's going to change. And I think that takes courage to even tell people. You know, my parents were still like, online dating, you know, you're going to get murdered. I was like, well, if I snog someone in a bar, it's the same risk. I can barely remember what they look like when they message me and we swap numbers, you know. But, you know, there was still stigma around it then, especially in my village pub, which is slightly middle of nowhere. You know, that idea, they didn't even have phone signal there. They're like, how does this, no dating apps in the So, yeah, I think it's from the moment you start dating and then when you are in a relationship, it all comes back to...
I love that, being all in and committing to dating.
And being hopeful. And, you know, now when I meet someone and they're trying at dating and they're really sort of, you know, they've decided it's what they want and they're going for it, you know, I think that that is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's not cool to be sitting at home pretending that you don't want to meet someone and that you don't care. You know, that's just not cool.
Yeah.
I think you can kind of create a projection of, like, the cool person you want to be from sort of the stories you tell on a first date. Like, I would always have the same stories that would sort of build up a version of who I was. And I think if you're going to fall in love in a really meaningful way, you have to find a way to sort of step away from those stories and let someone know you as you are rather than the sort of identity that you've created, which is, again, uncomfortable.
And which, again, takes courage.
Yeah, and we were talking about projections from both sides, as in, you know, I certainly spent a long time projecting stories onto relationships and men. You know, for instance, my parents have met as teenagers, and they met at 16 in art class, and they're still together, and they're so in love, and it was this sort of perfect romance that matured into this, like, wonderfully whole adult relationship.
Wow.
So, of course, when I was a teenager, I was like, oh, this is what's going to happen to me. You know, I'll meet someone at 16, and we'll be together forever, and it'll be amazing. And I had a teenage relationship that I think I really projected that story onto. And in actual fact, the relationship was not that great. I don't know if we even had many real meaningful conversations, but to me it was this nostalgia, it was this first love, formative, sort of almost like family, Dawson's Creek style story. And it took me a really, really long time to let go of that relationship because the projection that I'd sort of created about it was so intoxicating, and I was trying to echo that pattern of my parents' relationship. And then also noticing what people might project onto you too, and what role they might want you to fulfill, and maybe that's not who you are as a whole. So falling in love is a constant process of pulling back from those projections, I think. Which is, it's hard work sometimes. As if you're a writer, if you're somebody who's good at telling stories, then your projection is going to be very convincing.
Yes. And how do you do? Do you know how you do that?
I think, for me, age has a lot to do with it. I think you, I mean, I remember seeing this teenage boyfriend when I was a little older, and I was sort of sat around the room, and lots of his friends were there, and I just sort of had some perspective on the scene where I thought, you know, these are not my people. It was such a different world, and I never felt like I was having a conversation as myself. Like, I almost felt like I was always the 13-year-old version of myself. Mm. And I think that age gives you perspective on that. I wish I'd been wiser younger, but sadly it took me to my late 20s to really see some of those. But I think also when you build a life that you're happy with on your own, and you... that gives you a strong enough sense of self to cling on to. And I think the thing about the projections is that you're not in that story. You know, you almost disappear. Your sense of self really gets lost in that. Mm. And so I'd say that's the best way to get yourself out of the projection, is to really make sure you're rooted to your sense of self and it doesn't sort of slip away at those moments of infatuation. But also it's funny because I've always... you know, very much regretted those moments and looked back on them and thought, why didn't I know better? And why was I so infatuated with someone who never really knew me, and all these other things? And I think to some extent, you know, that's part of the learning of it all. And there's something amazing about that rush of first love that's really not based on reality in many cases. And so I wouldn't take that back. I think it's valuable learning experience. And I think you're always figuring out yourself a little bit in those early years. You know, I'm talking about sense of self, but I think it's shifting, and you're testing the boundaries, and I think that's why when we're younger, we kind of get obsessed with bands and put the posters on our walls, because we're trying to forge our identity as something. Like, maybe I'm the goth who listens to all this stuff. Or maybe I'm like a sort of indie, you know, obsessed with the Enemy and going to see the Strokes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think we're trying on all these different identities.
Yeah.
And you've got to cut yourself some slack while you're figuring that out. I think it probably took me... The biggest learning curve for me was probably like 27 to 29, 30, I think, in terms of that.
And how would you describe your relationship today?
I think I certainly felt like falling in love was sort of the finishing line, and actually it's the beginning.
Mm.
And I think for me, it's this constantly evolving, changing thing. It's something I feel very grateful for, but also I respect that it's still unfolding, and it's still new, and it's still something that we're working at. And, you know, it feels like a family, whereas I think a lot of my other relationships didn't. I think, you know, I'd always talk about going home to my parents, and very much saw that still as my, like, primary family structure. Mm. Whereas I feel like now my relationship really feels like a home to me, or family to me. And also I feel like we're a team, and we've both got a different strengths, and we're very different. Mm. But whatever happens, we'll just sort of be like, well, how am I going to help the other person through this? Or I think you have to take turns. Like, when I'm need him, he might be there, and then vice versa. So it's like a mesh of a family and a friendship and a team, and still a romance in very small ways. Like, we have this tiny thing where every day, because he gets up at 6 a.m. and I'm a terrible morning person, like, I sleep for 10 hours, you know. On the weekends I would sleep like till 10 if I could, and I go to bed with him at 10 and I still just can't wake up. I always go to the window in the morning before he leaves for work. So as he's walking down the road, he looks back and I'll wave. And it's just this very silly thing we've got into the habit of doing. It's just showing up. And I think that that's maybe a metaphor for the whole relationship of, you know, I'll feel tired, or he might forget to look back or whatever, but we'll always go there. Mm. If we've had a fight and, you know, I'm feeling annoyed at him, I'll just still go there. And there's something about he looks back and I'll smile. And I don't know, there's something about that moment which is just daily doing the work, even when you don't have to, even when you don't want to, that I think is how we try to live a whole relationship. But it's hard work sometimes too, because I think we're so busy, and you really have to actively... someone said this really interesting thing to me about how when you're at a party and you see a friend, you probably talk about like a book you've read, or I don't know, something interesting you read in the news. But when you come back home, often it's like, did you buy the milk?
Yes.
Did you do this? Are we going to book this holiday? Have you looked at booking.com? All this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it's what we do well, and what we actively try to do, is to like make sure we're still having those conversations and bringing in new things into the relationship. We're both quite curious people, but, you know, I want to know about the people at his school and how they're interacting with the kids. And I'll always come home with some book. I mean, he might not like this celebration. I don't know. I was like, I read this book and it's amazing and all these things. So I think that that's keeping that newness in a relationship, I think, is really important. And it's funny, we went out for... we went to see Letters Live, which is this amazing show where they read all these old letters. There's lots of like, actors and musicians. And as I was going there, I was thinking, God, I remember going on our date, because we don't often meet things, come from our separate places and meet at somewhere. I was remembering, I was thinking, God, I remember like rushing to the work loos, putting on some perfume, brushing my teeth, putting loads of makeup on, even sometimes changing an outfit. Mm-hmm. And I'd have that sort of like excited feeling in my stomach. And I was kind of thinking, I did look like a mess. And I was thinking, maybe I should have put some lipstick on you. Just thinking about the difference between then and now. Nick Cave was the surprise act at the venue. And we were just sort of holding hands, and he was playing God Is in the House. And there's this line about it, about holding hands. And I was holding his hand, and it was just this little magic moment. And I thought, you know, that's more romantic than anything in the beginning, in a way. Yeah, I think it's recognizing it's creating and recognizing those little moments of excitement or magic, maybe making space for them.
I think it's also that kind of finding the balance between, you know, as you were saying before, it's like the friendship, the housemates as well, housemate stuff. Like, who's going to cook the dinner tonight? Yeah, he's going to take the bins out. He's going to put on that whitewash this weekend. And then, you know, the romantic side of that too, you know, the many different facets, like balancing them out, because they're all really important.
And actually, I really worried about moving in with Dan, and because of the drudgery. And actually, I think what I love is kind of on a Monday when I'm feeling crap and had a terrible day, like, we'll just be silly. You know, we'll just be so silly. And I actually think Netflix is a dangerous thing. And we quite often will, to Dan's credit, more him than I, because I get really addicted to a series, but he'll say, let's just not watch TV tonight. Let's just put on some music and cook and chat. But I think that we really, that was how we fell in love. We would play song for song. We'd be like, pick a song, you pick a song, you pick a song. And it would, and then we'd drink or we'd make cocktails. And that was how we fell in love. Just putting on music, I think, makes a massive difference. Putting on music and having a conversation, I think, is, you know, even if it's like two nights a week, you do that.
Yeah.
I love to do that on Friday night. But also what you're saying about the kind of, I guess it's like the admin.
Yeah.
Of your relationship is like, I think there are times when you do something. Like, I know if I do something, I'm like, oh, I almost want for him to know that I've done this. Like, if I get really, like, I'm cleaning the shower every week or something, and then I'll be like, I'm cleaning the shower. That's a horrible phase you can fall into, where I've done this or I took the bins out. And I just think what you've got to do is work out what you're good at. And stick to that. Like, there'll be some things that you absolutely hate and that he doesn't mind, and vice versa. And I think you've just got to work out what those things are. I'm feeling bad because I haven't taken the bins out in a long time.
I'm just looking at my bin now. God, does it need to go out?
Shit, I really hope he doesn't listen to that. You never take the bin. But I think also there's that funny time of like when you're at work and we always have this phone call. It's like, what should we have for dinner? Pesto? And it used to drive me nuts. It's like, why didn't we go to the supermarket on the Sunday? We always say we do. Why haven't we done it? And then we just have to run to M&S and buy something. But at the same time, there's always that moment in the day where I really look forward to hearing his voice still. Like, I'm excited every day. I'm like, oh, hi, you know. And I think it's recognising that second bit and not just getting annoyed about that neither of you can think of anything to cook. But, you know, I think the more I think about love and interview people about their relationships as well, I think the people who make it work are the people who are very active in all this stuff, you know, in the newness, in the turning off the Netflix, all this stuff. And I think the more active you are within your relationship, the more exciting, happy stuff you get and the easier it is to be active in it. And I think if you don't do anything, if you just expect it to tick along, then it becomes even more boring and then it becomes even harder to participate in it. And then I think the final thing is knowing that it can't always be good. You know, I'm very much guilty of, because I think we're very lucky in our relationship that's, you know, we don't really fight often, and we're only 3 years in, so maybe that's still the the easy bit. But if things are not good, or if we feel a bit distant, you know, I'm like, gosh, you know, I hate that. I hate that our relationship is in a bad place. Mm. Whereas, and I would sort of say to him, you know, we're so distant, and I get upset by that. And I think what I've learned is that it's okay. That's okay too. It's okay to have a few days where you're like missing each other, and then you'll talk about it. It doesn't always have to mean something. It might just be that both your bad moods have hit at the same time, or you're both stressed at the same time. It's not necessarily a signifier that there's something wrong with your relationship. Mm. And I think that's something important too. Especially if you're somebody analytical, you're like, what's wrong this week? You're just both feeling a bit stressed, it's fine.
Do you find that Dan kind of helps you to get that perspective? Does he reassure, or does he play that role?
Yeah. I think, again, the projection, the story is that I'm this, you know, I'm very analytical and love to talk about love, and I'm, you know, the one who's sort of really thinking about how our relationship's working, and that he's the sort of, you know, think about this less and the funny one, and when actually sometimes he'll see things that I really don't see. Mm. And he is, I mean, he works with children. I think he has like a deep sense of empathy and understanding of people. And I think, you know, I have the ability to sort of catastrophize. So I'll be like, before we moved in together, I'll be like, well, once we move in together and it's like this, we have to prepare for the worst. Let's like batten down the hatches for the storm that's coming in like 5 years. And that's my way of trying to like protect us. And I think because I've seen so many stories of things going wrong as well, I'm always thinking, right, what can we, you know, I want to do everything we can to make sure that we don't fall victim to circumstance. And he's very, very good at making us live in the moment and making me realize that some of that stuff is outside of our control, and to just be silly and laugh and have fun. And also I think he, like any good relationship, comes from really understanding each other. Mm. And I think certainly in the past, a boyfriend would, if I was maybe acting a little crazy, they would interpret it in some way and it would just become this big drama. Mm. Whereas Dan would just say to me, you know, just being silly, come on. And then I'm like, yeah, I am. And I think that you really, when someone knows you, they know when the things matter to you, and then when you're just feeling a bit anxious and being obsessive about something that you don't need to be. And I also just think you bring, like, Dan's very good in the short term and I'm quite good in the long term. So that's kind of like how we think. Like, he's very impulsive and spontaneous, and I'm very much like, let's think about stuff in 5 years. And I think that works well together. Mm-hmm. Because he'll sort of bring me back to the now, and then I'll be thinking a bit about the future. Do you know what I think, though, for all these things is just, we just talk. We talk all the time. And about the fun new stuff, about books or politics, even if we're arguing, about the relationship, but about, you know, that thing of my parents always had is like when they get into bed with each other at night, I always used to hear them chatting. Like, what are they chatting about? They've known each other since they're 16. What have they still got to talk about? But that's that thing of like, you get back from a dinner party, you get back from somewhere, and you just
the debrief.
And I always feel like there's never enough time at night. Like, I always want to talk more. And I think you need to find someone who you find interesting enough to always want to talk to. I once went out with a guy who was not a talker, and it was just never going to work. And I think that's what we were speaking about at the beginning of, you know, looking at the pictures and seeing the concrete dick pic, not a real dick pic, but, you know, the bollard penis. Is at that beginning stage, I think, more than that stuff, you're really almost like a detective, I think, trying to get clues as to what that person's values are and who they really are as a person. And I think that fairly early on, I knew that Dan had really good values. I mean, for instance, when we were quite early dating, he had this little swimming costume in his, like, it was like on the floor, so he's washing it. And I was like, does he have a child? You know, has he got, like, or worse, something I didn't want to think about. And there was a little girl at his school who, like, whose mum hadn't washed her swimming costume or something. He'd taken it home to wash it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, like, the man he is. And I feel like if you have found someone whose moral code, whose moral values mm-hmm. you're aligned with, mm-hmm. when you're having those bigger freakouts or conversations, you sort of always come back to that.
Mm.
Because however they're acting or whatever's going on, you're like, I know at your moral, at your core.
Mm.
And it was funny because when we get engaged, again, my catastrophizing thing, I was saying, I knew Dan was right because I knew worst case scenario, one day we had kids and we got divorced, that he would do that with dignity and we would never fight. We will always be kind to each other. I think that then that moral, their moral fibre is important.
Has anything surprised you about your relationship?
I think another difficult part of falling in love is it does make you confront your own flaws a little. And, you know, even with bad boyfriends, it's very easy to sort of paint yourself as the victim and, you know, in the stories of your past relationship, you're the sort of gutsy heroine who's maybe too complicated and they're the sort of bad guy, and you don't always question your own behaviour as much, I think. Mm. Whereas in a long-term relationship, you always have to look long and hard at your own behaviour. And so I think that one of the surprising things has been realising that I thought I had myself all figured out, and actually, you know, there are still some things that I am bad at and that I need to work on. For example, if I'm feeling vulnerable or rejected, then I will still sulk. And I'm like, how am I still doing that? Because I know that, but I'm still doing it. And I think, you know, some advice that a relationship therapist gave me is you always need to pay attention to when you're irritated, because those moments of irritation tell you a lot. And I think I really noticed that I was irritated when I felt vulnerable. So I think that's surprised me about myself. And also, Dan is not the person who I thought I would... If I could have... I always thought I could write myself the best boyfriend. I was like, I can write this guy. And, you know, since I was young, I would write characters and stories. And I'd be like, you know, he's amazing. He's these qualities. The most amazing thing is that I could never have written Dan, and he's more amazingly right for me than anyone I could have envisaged. And, you know, when we were talking about the projections, I was saying to you that the version of him that I would sort of think that I had a lot in common with is the version that writes poetry and is deeply intelligent and an amazing writer, but he also is a lad who sits around his football shorts and plays video games and and has the teenage boy sense of humor, and now those are all things that I love about him too. But I don't know if he put love Call of Duty on the dating app, if I ever would have gone for it. And we had came from really different backgrounds as well, and we he's a real extrovert, and he would like love to fill our house with loads of people and always have people coming and going, and he's got so many friends. And I'm social, but I'm much more of an introvert in that I get my energy from being alone. So again, I was like, I could never date an extrovert in that way. And here I am. And again, it works because I like, you know, he respects the fact that I need time on my own, and sometimes he'll be like, oh, you're doing your alone thing. And I also love that he has a full life outside of me. To me, that's so attractive that we have our separate worlds within the world that we create together.
I also loved what you said when we'd met up before and you talked about your relationship being like a third person or something separate that you talk about. What does the relationship need?
I think it's that what we were talking about being active, as in when it's sort of something within you and it's just this sort of ephemeral thing, it's just something that you assume or take for granted. But I think if it's something you see outside of you two, then it's something that you both sort of have to nurture and look after and grow, and that you're responsible for in a way. And I think that nothing good in my life ever has come from me just sitting around and it just happening. Like, that's just not how my life has worked. I got my job because I quit another job and went to waitress in a pizza restaurant and you know, actively had to take that big risk. And I met Dan because I made the effort to go on a dating app and force myself into that sort of space. And, you know, even my good friends I met because maybe I went up to them at a time, or, you know, there was somebody at work and I said, do you want to go for a drink? And then they turned out to be my best friend or whatever. And I feel like that within a relationship, like, nothing amazing is going to come from us just sitting back and assuming it's always going to be there and doing nothing. Like, I really think our relationship is good because we, as you said, see it as a third, and we put a lot into it, and we want to make it good. You know, it's something I feel really proud of. It's something that I feel is the sum of our efforts, not just our feelings. And yet, sadly, nothing good in life comes without work. It's just, that's the fact of it. And also, there's something amazing about knowing that that other person wants to put in the work too.
Yeah, and I think that's crucial, because if you have one person that's willing to put in the effort and the other that isn't, then there is that tension, because there isn't both of you that's willing to put in the effort. So I think the fact that both of you are is testament to what a team you are together.
Also, because it makes life more fun.
Yes.
Ultimately, like, you know, getting yourself out of the drudgery, all this other stuff. Like, it's not a chore, but it would become a chore if you just did nothing. That's the chore. You know, turning off the Netflix and having, you know, it's a fun thing to do. It's not taking the bins out. And I think it's just so easy to forget somebody. I think that's the core of it. You can, and I think this is true of our relationship with our parents too. You know, we just assume they're there and they'll always be there, and we know that they love us, and we almost forget to put the effort in with them. And that's like another dimension for me that I'm, you know, I've learned to really see my parents as friends and people who I want to invest in that love. And I want them to know that I don't take that love for granted either. I think that's with every bit of love you have in your life. It's easy to forget it's there. And then maybe one day you'll look and it's not anymore if you've forgotten it.
And there's something that I love about your newsletter. It's really about expanding our notion of love. And we're very much about that as well. You know, looking at not just romantic love, but love with your friends, love with family, love with nature, love with animals, love. It's love.
Love with work, love with your purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I interviewed somebody the other day, and she hasn't met somebody, and she's in her 40s, and she's still trying, and she really, really wants to. And when I'd asked her what she wishes she'd known about love, she said, I can't believe that I had the privilege of having this huge, big love from, like, the second I came into the world from my two parents. She's like, I know so many people don't have that, and to me it's a miracle that my whole life, those two people, from like the second I came out, just loved me. And she's like, I just don't take that for granted. And instead of looking at all the things she didn't have, and then when she said that, I was like, gosh, this is a miracle that those, if or one or you, if you have a parent who just loves you, like they don't even know you yet, it's this miracle. And I think doing this work has really made me think about that more. And also, in terms of romantic love, that makes your romantic love stronger if you're not relying on it for everything you need and for all the different bits of love. And I do see people, I mean, everyone needs different things from a relationship, but I do see people who have put, who rely on all their love from a relationship. And I think that's dangerous. I think the sad fact is your partner's not always going to be there forever, unless you're very lucky. And I just think it's a sad waste of a life not to look for love in lots of different places. And you get different things from different people. Like I was saying, when I was always trying to date the journalists in the beginning, I think it was because I really wanted to chat to somebody about my career that I loved. And I wanted to come home and say, you know, should I write this? Should I do this? And actually now I have that with my best friend who's also in journalism. And she's like one of the great loves of my life. And she's my career wing woman. And, you know, every day I'll send her a WhatsApp. Should I send this email? Should I do this? And I don't need Dan necessarily to be part of that.
That's a really important lesson. It takes the pressure off your romantic relationship as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I wrote something recently about this. I was just obsessed with finding a boyfriend by my 30th birthday, and this become this sort of thing, this sort of mission, and this thing that I desperately wanted. And then inevitably when it didn't happen, and I did think about some terrible date, I was like, should I bring him? My friend was like, you hated that guy. Why would you bring him just for the sake of having a date? And I was like, you're right. And then just sitting at that party and seeing all the love in the room and seeing my parents and their friends and my brother who made the playlist and my friend who did speech and just feeling like my life was really full of love. And that was the most single I'd ever been.
So we're coming to the end of this interview. It's been so, so wonderful. I just have a couple more questions. So what relationship advice would you give to your younger self with the wisdom and knowledge that you have now?
I think I would say focus on building a life you are proud of on your own without someone. So I think that I often felt like the someone was the happiness. And I think what I did later on and what I wish I'd done sooner is think about what happiness looks like without somebody else. And then when they come along, you'll be able to have a better and healthier relationship with them. And I think, you know, the adventures and the rush and the intensity of first love is amazing. And I wouldn't take that back, but I wish I had not poured all my energy into it. And so I'd say spread the energy around a little more. And there are many adventures to be had that are not in a romantic relationship. So I wish I'd say that.
And finally, what advice would you give to single women today who are looking to get into a happy and healthy relationship?
I think it's twofold. So the thing I always say is that it's knowing that it's both within and without and outside of your control. So I'd say, similarly to the advice I give to my teenage self, I almost think you have to trick yourself and say, if I never met anyone, if the worst case scenario, I never met anyone, what's the best version of my life? So I always felt like this, like if I never managed to meet someone, what's the best version that my life would look like without them? And then go make that. Because the chances are, if you make that, you're a lot more likely to find the person who's right for you for the right reasons. Mm. And also in the meantime, you'll find more happiness in your life. And, you know, for me, that meant like really getting a career I was happy with, living on my own, investing in my friendships, dancing, singing, learning the guitar, you know, all that stuff. If you do that, I think then you're in a much better place. But at the same time, it's knowing, not being afraid to say that this is what you want and to going all in on it, you know. I really think it was me sitting down and saying, I want this, you know, I'm going to try and do all the other things and make myself happy, but I also know that I have to at least pour some effort into this. And if I'm really trying at my career and, you know, every night I'm coming home and I'm applying for jobs and, you know, what am I doing for my relationship, which is equally, if not more important to me. I think that the tendency when you're, well, certainly when I was single, is to really look at yourself and think, what am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. What is it about me? You know, what's wrong with me? I felt like I was very sort of complicated and sort of dark and twisty. And really, all the flaws I have then are the same as the flaws I have now in many ways. It's just then I would use my flaws and say, that's why I'm single. But I used to almost package them up in a box and label it, this is why I'm single. You know, I'm messy or I'm this or I'm this. I'm still messy and I'm still late and I'm still disorganized. Those weren't the reasons why I was single. I think it was a bit of luck. It was a bit of luck and a bit of trying. So I'd say those two things. Know that it's within your control and put yourself in the best possible place and don't be afraid to try. But also it's a little outside your control. You're not always doing anything wrong. And cut yourself some slack for that.
Wow, thank you so, so much for taking the time to speak to us today.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast show. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you're feeling stuck in your love life and finding dating to be frustrating and exhausting, then come and join Get Ready for Love, our 30-day online course to transform your love life.
As well as having us, Selena and Vicky, as your co-pilots throughout your journey, bringing you a lesson every day and videos and audio tutorials bursting with energy and love, you'll also be welcomed into our private Facebook group, The Love Zone, where you can hang out with like-minded women and ask for help and guidance whenever you need it.
It really is gorgeous in there. Head over to loveprojectlove.com/get-ready-for-love to sign up.
And if you'd like to find out more about love coaching with me, Vicky, then head to coaching and courses over on loveprojectlove.com.